How old are you, Juanita?
I am 54.
And where were you born?
I was born in the last house in Dipper Harbor on this side of the county line. It was owned by David H. Mawinney, who was married to my mother's sister, Margaret.
And did you go to school?
I went to school in Dipper Harbor. I also spent some months in the Macy's Bay School one winter preparing for Teachers College entrance, or Provincial Normal School as it was known in those days.
And have you lived here all of your life?
No, I lived here until I went to St. John to work at the age of 17, I believe. And I married when I was 20. Of course, when I was working in St. John, I was back and forth on weekends. I married when I was 20, and my husband was at that time a serving soldier. And we moved first to Newfoundland. And after the war, I lived in Montreal. From Montreal, we moved to Wainwright, Alberta. From Alberta, we moved back to Manitoba. From Manitoba, back to Montreal. From Montreal to Picton, Ontario. From Picton, Ontario to Oromocto, New Brunswick. From Oromocto back to Montreal, and in 1968, my husband retired and we moved back to Dipper Harbor.
How did it feel to come back?
I came back with mixed feelings. I had learned to love other parts of the country and could have settled in Western Canada and been very happy. However, as the old saying goes, there's no place like home. And my mother was still living, and it was my pleasure to come back and have her live with us until she died. It was also, my brother was still here and most of my relatives, and so there were many pleasant things about coming back.
Before we move on, you do have a family too.
Yes, I have three girls, Faith, Anne, and Sylvia. When we moved back, Faith was attending the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton. Anne entered University of New Brunswick in St. John the year we moved back, and Sylvia was at home with us.
And where, what home did you come back to?
We came back to my mother's home. My father had built the home, bought the land in 1916, had built the home, and when they were married in 1919, moved into it. After his death in 1947, mother carried on the home and lived in it most of the time, excepting the winter months she spent with me from about 1955 on. She spent her winters with us. And in 1968, she felt she couldn't carry on the home any longer. So my husband bought the house and the property, and we came back to make our home with her living with us.
Did she tell you much about conditions of her young life?
Yes, mother was born at what is known as the Round Meadows, a home between Dipper and Chance, and lived there until she was 30 years of age when she married my father and settled in Dipper. She often talked of her girlhood, and she, up until that time, spent most of her time in this area. As she was older, she traveled much more extensively. But she often talked of her grandparents, uncles and aunts, corresponded with some who had moved away to British Columbia and California and such places.
Her marriage and your father's was a union of Irish and Scottish Thompsons?
Yes, that's right. Mother was a Thompson, whose grandfather, Robert Thompson, came from Northern Ireland as a boy or young man. My father was William Stanley Thompson, Thompson, whose father was Charles Thompson, grandfather William. And they lived at Duck Pond, which is on the road to Point La Proe. My father was born there and grew up in that area.
What information have you from your father's people about the families at Point La Proe or how the economics developed there?
Most of what I've learned about my father's people, I learned from my mother's mother, which seems rather strange, but she was close friends of some of my father's relatives, and used to be at Duck Pond as a girl. When she chummed with a cousin of my father's, she used to tell me a great deal about them. I was particularly interested in the fact that they built ships in that area. She told me about a brigantine that was built there, and they called it the Hildegard. It was lost in a storm at sea, and they picked up her name plate on the coast of Ireland. I don't know how many people were aboard her or how many were lost, but I remember grandmother talking about that. My father's people were seagoing people. He had an uncle who was a sea captain, who I believe is buried in South America. He had another uncle who died in an accident down off the West Indies, whose body was brought home, a sealed casket, and is buried in the Thompson Burying Ground. My father's father did some fishing, but he was also a carpenter or bridge builder, actually. He worked on quite a few of the bridges in the area, even going outside some distance. He did some fishing, but not as extensively, I don't think, as his sons did. They also were quite self-sufficient in that they kept cows, hens, such animals, and raised their own vegetables. They had horses. I remember my grandfather very faintly. I only remember seeing him once, as I was a very young child when he died. I remember my grandmother, that is my father's mother, more. She was a Miles before she married my grandfather, and I remember her only faintly as a well woman that she lived for some time after she suffered a stroke and was in bed over at Aunt Flo's for over a year, and I remembered seeing her there. We always were quite interested in her because my father favored her in his looks, the dark eyebrows.
What was their home like and their furnishings? Do you know that?
Yes, I remember being in their home. I don't remember too well before my grandfather died. I knew the house better after they died, and other people lived there. When my grandmother broke up housekeeping, she gave my father some of her furniture. They had a very nice organ, which is still in the house, our house. And the furnishings, they had very nice, what they call parlor furniture. And it was contemporary with the times in which they lived. I have today a donut turner, which my grandfather made for my grandmother, which was made from a piece of wood and made with a jackknife, I presume. I still have that. It's sort of a novelty.
It works very well, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. Of course, it's just like a long stick, a handle that would fit your hand. I don't remember their furnishings as well as I do remember Mother's mother, because of course they lived much longer. And I was older and I visited there more.
Would you like to tell about them?
Yes, Mother's father and mother lived, as I said earlier, at the Round Meadows. And as from a very young child, I went there. I don't remember the first time I was ever in my grandfather's home, but I do remember going there when I was in grade two and reciting for them, "Who has seen the wind?" And they would get me to say it for everybody that came in. And I didn't realize until later years it was the inflection in my voice and the emphasis I put on it that amused them so much. So I had been visiting there before I went to school. I suppose being the oldest daughter of my mother, who had lived home for 30 years, perhaps I felt, was one reason why I felt so very much at home in their home. Their home was very nicely furnished. Grandmother's parlor was like all the nice parlors of those days. It was had wall-to-wall carpeting. It had what we as children didn't think was nice, but today it's very valuable, horsehair sofas. I remember sitting on it and it was rather itchy, but with the walnut wood and the grape design, which was very pretty. The sofa and the platform rocker and the different chairs. They also had a parlor table, and of course she had a lovely organ and lace curtains and all the things that went with a parlor in those days. Also, there was what they called a sitting room, or as people used to say, a settin' room. I suppose we could compare it maybe with our family rooms today. There was a couch and easy chairs. When they got their first radio, it was put in that room. Telephone was there. And of course, grandmother always had plants, beautiful plants. And they were always blooming, parlor maples and geraniums and wandering Jews, all the different plants. And she had one plant that was very interesting to us as children. It was a century plant. We which Uncle Ern had brought when, during his sailing days, from some of the countries, I'm not sure which one, but it was a warmer climate than what we're used to. Actually, it was a form of cactus. But to us, it was a century plant. It only bloomed once every 100 years, and they tell us the blossom only lasted a day. Grandmother tended that plant faithfully until she was no longer able to care for her home. That was a point of interest.
Did it bloom while she had it?
No, not to my knowledge. At least it didn't while I was there, but it grew quite large. She kept it in a crock, which would be maybe a gallon crock, and it grew. Mother's father also went to sea as a young man. Grandpa was a steward on sailing vessels. Uncle Ern followed his father in this, would you call it tradition? And also went to sea for a good many years as a young man. I remember hearing of my grandfather telling that he had sailed in sailing vessels in a storm one time at sea that was so rough that the yardarms dipped on either side. And yet they came through the storm. Grandfather would be away when he was first married, approximately 9 months out of a year on sailing vessels. However, he built a home, and as his family came along, he felt it. He had to be more at home, and he did fish. He built weirs, and he fished. He also farmed. They had 11 children, 7 boys and 4 girls. My father's family also were a family of 11, which I didn't mention. 4 of my father's family died as children inside of 1 year. The results of whooping cough took them. Mother's family all grew to be men and women. The first one to die was Aunt Olive, and she was near 30 years of age, possibly a little older when she died. Grandfather lived to be 79, and Mama's mother lived to be 82. Now, Grandfather, Mother's father, that is, I mentioned earlier, his father came from Northern Ireland. Grandpa was born in Lorneville. Although his parents were living at the time, I believe, in Little Musquash, before they moved to Chance Harbor. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that Mother used to say that her father was born in Lorneville because his mother had a sister there and she went up there for the occasion. My grandmother, that is Mother's mother, was a Janes, and she was born, I believe, on what we call Grandpa's old place, but I'm not sure of that. She was born in 1860, and her father had come from St. John at the time of the cholera outbreak, and I'm not sure whether that was before she was born. Some of the children were born in St. John, and some were born in what we call Grandpa's old place, which is actually part of Dipper Harbor. So I'm not sure whether she was born down there or in St. John. I could probably look it up in some papers I have at home. But she did grow up there. When the cholera broke out in St. John, she used to tell me this, he was quite comfortably situated in the city, but the people died in the streets. And he had bought a piece of land at an auction, and he came into his wife one day and said that the camels, who were men from Dipper Harbor, were in a boat, and he said, I'm going down to Dipper Harbor until this blows over. And so he took his wife and whatever children they had at the time and moved to Dipper Harbor. She felt that she would be back very shortly. They didn't think this disease would last too long. And so she left her hat in the milliner's and other things that she planned to attend to. She walked out and left. And she said it was 7 years before she was back into the city of St. John. They came down, and I believe they lived in a log cabin or some sort of a makeshift home for some time. And people by the name of Burns lived next to the land that he had bought. And they apparently were very kind to them. And in later years, as soon as my grandfather could, he established a farm and built a very nice home. I remember it quite well also, because we were into it many times, of course, not when he was there, but after he had died.
Is that the one at the point?
No, that was the one that's not there now. It's the one that up at what we call Grandpa's old place. The foundation is still there. Jennings' place, they call it now. Yeah. Well, maybe it was on a point, but if you remember. I remember being into it. It was in pretty good condition when my sister Merle was a baby, because we went up there one time. Mother used to always take us on a picnic on her birthday, which was the 19th of August. And I remember going up there when Merle was a baby in a carriage, and Mother put her in the parlor bedroom to sleep. The walls, the furniture had been moved out because Essie Jennings had lived in the home, and they had moved to St. John and taken most of the furniture. But the house was still in good condition at that time. However, when they took the windows out of it to use in other buildings, the weather got in and it rapidly decayed.
About what year was it still in good condition?
Well, Merle was born in 1929, so it would be 1930, 31, or 32. Along there, it would be in fairly good condition. Because I've been in it several times, but I pinpoint that particular time because remembering Merle in the carriage. But I believe she was sitting up, so she would be maybe a year or two old.
Where did these people receive their education? I know they read good books, and they had good books. And did they go to school?
Mother's people, Aunt Mary, I know, went to school in St. John. She was old enough to go. Grandmother never went to a formal school, but her father's brother came from California and gave them private tutoring at the home. Grandmother could read and write, was very interested in good literature, read a lot of it. However, she seldom wrote. She was very conscientious about her writing, although she could write. She felt her lack of education because she felt that the tutoring at home was not sufficient. They valued education very highly, mother's people. Now, grandfather, I don't know where he must have gone to school, possibly in Chance Harbor, because he wrote very well. I don't remember just. But he did all the letter writing to the family when they went away. And I have letters in the house right now that his brother, Samuel, wrote from Australia. He went to Australia as a young man and lived there for a number of years. In fact, he died out there. Never married, and he used to write home. Grandpa corresponded regularly with him.
Is that Samuel Thompson?
Yes, Grandpa's brother.
And did the Jameses fish?
They fished some. I don't know how much Grandpa James fished. The boys fished, Uncle Will, and I believe Uncle George fished for a time. However, he went to St. John in later years. But I think as young men, they fished. Mother's grandfather, had a fairly nice farm worked up. I remember of being there when the barn was in good condition. And they had quite a few cows, because I could remember Mother telling me about the cows. They also raised sheep when Grandma was young. And of course they worked hard. They worked from morning till night, as anybody who did who got along in those days. But they had nice buildings and nice furniture, so they must have been hard workers to accomplish so much in those days when there was no government aid.
Did they make yarn? Did they make the actual yarn out of the sheep's wool?
Carded yarn? Yes. I believe they did, because they had spinning wheels and they had carding, so they must have, although I have never seen any of the yarn they made themselves. But I know they kept sheep, and they must have made yarn from it, because I remember Grandma telling about her mother chasing a bear that had come for the sheep.
How did she chase it?
Well, I think she just took her apron and kind of shooed it and clapped her hands, and it went away. And this, of course, they were afraid of things like that.
Did they put sheep in barns, or how did they keep them at night?
I don't know. I really don't. I think they must have put them in barns, because I think they would have to be protected from the bears.
Yes.
And he had a fairly large barn, or at least it seemed large to me as a child. And there also was room for their carriages, and this sort of thing was never left outside.
The Christian influence has been strong in this area. What do you remember about it, Juanita?
Well, I remember particularly my grandfather's home, and his family, that is my mother's father, was a very spiritually minded man, and he was influential in organizing the first Sunday school, I believe, in Dipper Harbor. He was a superintendent for over 20 years. And I remember my mother telling me that he used to walk from the Round Meadows to Dipper Harbor and carry his little bundle of kindling with which he lit the fire and superintended the Sunday school, taught the Bible class for over 20 years. Of course, he didn't, in later years, I believe he sometimes drove. He was very interested in the church, that is the Baptist church, and his family, many of them followed in his footsteps. Uncle Gordon took over the superintendency of the Sunday school upon my grandfather's retirement. I believe he was influential in this way among the people of the community. Even today, as we go to Sunday school, it's sometimes interesting to count his descendants, who make up a good percentage of the congregation. A grandfather in his own home, one of my earliest memories of him was reading the Bible and kneeling in prayer with his family before he began his day's work. Grandmother was very much confined to the house. She always felt her work was in the home as a mother, but she and my grandfather were very much in sympathy as far as spiritual matters went. As far as the social life of the community, my earliest recollections were pie social seemed to be a big thing in order to raise money for schools or any local projects. They would have what they called a pie social, which later developed into a basket social. By this, the single girls, and some of the married ones too, would bake a very nice Washington pie, or today we call them layer cakes, decorate them, and put their name in a very inconspicuous place, and take them to the hall or wherever the party was to be held. They would be auctioned off, and any of the boys that were interested in the girls would try and guess whose pie or basket it was. And as they were held up for auction, the boys that wanted to get a certain girl's pie would start bidding on it. And it was interesting to see how high they would go, sometimes just for the privilege of getting the basket or the pie. Of course, the basket contained something to eat, and they had the privilege of eating with the girl whose owned basket they bought. Then there were skating parties. Of course, we would think nothing of walking to Duck Pond on a cold winter's night, where we lit a bonfire, the boys did, and girls and boys would spend a pleasant couple of hours skating, then we would take off our skates and walk home. This was one place that the Dipper Harbor girls got to see the Macy's Bay Boys. We also skated in the over in what we call Snyder's Pond, which was a pond between Dipper Harbor and the Ridge. Now, as to summer activities, there used to be bonfires. And of course, our generation used to do a lot of swimming. However, my father, who was a fisherman, fished all his life. His generation hardly ever went swimming. He couldn't swim, and he found this quite amusing sometimes to think that all of his family were interested in swimming. And we used to think that a man that spent his life on the water should be able to swim. But he seemed to think that if he fell overboard, he'd freeze before he could swim ashore anyway. You asked a while ago about the roads. I remember when they put the road through in 1928, although I was only about little over six years old at the time. But I remember the road previous to this, and we always walked to Sunday school. And we would walk up what is now commonly known as the Turn. We used to call it Lazy Corner. The road went around there and across behind where Kenneth James's house is today, where now it runs between Kenneth James's and Harvey's. It went behind the house, down over the hill, by George Clark's house, which was at that time Ed Clark's house, or his white widow, Lillian's, and came out and went across the sandbar to the other side of the bridge. And then it curved down to the eastward around what we call Driscoll's Pond, another place that was good for skating. The older people used to call it Mary Jane's, because Mary Jane used to live on the side of the hill. However, when I was very young, Driscoll's bought the place, and we called it Driscoll's Pond. The road went around that towards the westward in through the woods, and up around and came out at the top of the hill and went on toward the church. Now, this made quite a bit of extra walking, and so we used to take what we call a shortcut. We would go over the bridge and head sort of northeast and go up a path through the woods and come out almost at the church. One of the things I remember most about this path was there was a spring where we would stop for a drink of water. My father, when he dressed in his Sunday clothes, he always seemed to have a little aluminum cup in his back pocket. I don't remember seeing it during the week, but on Sunday, that aluminum cup was collapsible, and it would only be about an inch high, but when he would open it up, it would be about 4 inches high, and he would put this in the under the spring and give us all a drink of water. I don't think water has ever tasted quite so good since. We would go on to Sunday school that road. I remember quite well when they put the road literally through the hill, we called it the cut, and it still gets that name by some of us who remember it being put through as children. Of course, this was a short walk for us because our father used to tell us when he walked to Sunday school, he walked from Duck Pond to Dipper, and then he would go up and see, as he got older, up and see my mother at Round Meadows, and then walk to Chance Harbor maybe for a service in the evening and walk home.
About how many miles would that be?
Well, it would be 3 miles from Duck Pond to Dipper, and it would be another 3 to Round Meadows, would be 6, and I suppose another 2 to Chance Harbor anyway would be 8, and then he would have the 8-mile walk home at night. But they didn't seem to mind that at all in those days, and if the service was in Mesa's Bay, they would probably walk there instead of to Chance Harbor.
Did the ministers live in the villages?
The ministers in my time lived in the parsonage in Chance Harbor. However, before the parsonage was built, I believe they used to board at different houses, and student ministers who came didn't always live in the parsonage. I understand before my time they boarded with Aunt Mary Thompson, that would be Uncle Dave Thompson's. And also, I believe some of them stayed at Dave Mawinney's in Mesa's Bay. These would be student ministers that came in the summertime. I don't remember hearing the dates of when the parsonage was built, but I know my mother was married in the parsonage in Chance Harbor, which was in April of 1919, so it was built previous to that.
You mentioned the social life in the community. Now, what was the feeling between neighbors?
Well, in the days before cars became so plentiful, people, I think, had more time for each other. They visited back and forth, and they would spend an evening at each other's homes, many times just talking, although the women would go and help each other quilt. They put a quilt in the winter time. A different woman would go and quilt. The distance didn't seem to mean so much. People visited, of course, with their own families. My mother didn't hesitate to walk to the Round Meadows to spend an evening with her parents. That was approximately 3 miles. She did it many times, particularly after they got older. And I remember her telling me one night about coming home when she had to go slowly and feel with her feet because she was afraid she'd walk into the tide. It was so dark she couldn't see the road, and the road wasn't built up as much as it is now, and she was afraid that coming across the sandbar she would walk into the tide by getting off the road. She also walked to Uncle Dave Mawinney's many evenings. My father would walk to Duck Pond. After his parents died, his two brothers still lived there. Uncle Leonard built a home and lived for approximately 18 years in Duck Pond before he moved to Deadman's Harbor downshore. And Uncle Alfred also lived in the home that Duncan Clark had lived in. And he lived there for quite a number of years before he moved to Dipper as an older man. After Uncle Leonard moved away, he found it quite lonely. And of course, things were much more convenient in the community. People were very helpful in times of sickness or trouble of any kind. If a person was ill, in those days, they cared for their older citizens, families. Parents lived in with some of the family, or some of the family would go and look after their parents in their homes until they died. Both of my mother's parents died in their own home. My grandfather and grandmother both died in the home that he had built. My father's father died at Duck Pond in the home there. His mother died, as I mentioned earlier, at my aunt's because of, she had taken a stroke and she was in bed for several months. When people were ill and there was no help for them because of old age or some incurable disease, neighbors usually rallied round and would go and sit up with them at night if they were very ill. It wasn't always possible to have a doctor in attendance, although there was a doctor in Mesa's Bay for some years, and there were also doctors different times resided in La Brea. And they would call these doctors in. However, they couldn't stay at one home, so neighbors would go and stay with them. I remember my father sat up with different men who were dying. He sat up with Hathaway Craft, who lived next door to us. And also, I remember when Warren Clark died, my father went there and stayed. Men would go, if it was a man who was ill, men would go and watch with them in case they needed something. If there was a nurse available, a nurse would usually go and stay with them. But we didn't have too many nurses in the community at that time. Any of the girls that had trained for nurses usually were employed elsewhere and unable to be at home. I remember when a death would occur, the neighbors would go and prepare the body. This happened up until I was a fairly big child. I can remember different ones in the community whose bodies were prepared by the neighbors. In fact, when my sister died in 1929, Mrs. George Thompson came. How it was a bad storm. We were unable to get help from St. John because the roads were blocked. It was in February. And the casket was ordered by telephone and came down on the Connors. And relatives and friends did the work that today we would have a funeral director come in and do. They were always very helpful. If the mother was ill, food was brought in, and they would come in and help in the home where there were small children. Birth was very similar. I remember when my youngest sister was born at home. In fact, there were seven of us. Lee was born in the hospital in St. John. I was supposed to have been born there, but I came a little before my mother could get there, and so I was born at my aunt's. The other members of the family, Alma, Stanley, Sylvia, Noreen, and Merle, were all born in the house in Dipper Harbor. A doctor was in attendance when they could have a doctor, but one or two of the children were born with the services of Mrs. Boyle, who was a very kind, helpful lady, and my mother, till the day she died, appreciated Mrs. Boyle. Many of the children in the community were born without the services of a physician and grew up to be healthy and well, and the mothers lived as well. I don't remember the loss of any life in the community because of childbirth without the services of a doctor.
That's quite remarkable.
Yes, I think so. Mrs. Lucy Boyle was most helpful at times like that, and so very kind. And getting back to the funerals, or deaths in homes, everybody respected such times. Neighbors and friends gathered round. Most of the people who passed away were laid out in the homes in the community, and the different neighbors would go and express their sympathy and visit with those who were left behind. When a funeral went through the community, the procession, usually in the early days, it would be horse-drawn, and the men would walk behind the casket, and the neighbors along the route would pull their blinds. I remember when old Mr. Harkins died in Dipper, his funeral was held from St. Brendan's Church, and as the funeral procession went down the road, I remember Mother pulling the blinds to show her respect. I also remember when Sarah Cox died across the road from us, Mr. Kerskadden, Tommy Kerskadden, took the casket on the with his horse and sled, or sloven, I guess it was. And I remember the next day he took a lot of the children for a ride, and I was quite concerned because I was afraid where he had taken the funeral one day that my sister Alma was on the sloven the next day, and I was afraid that she was going also to the cemetery. We were quite a lively bunch as children. When you stop to consider, there were six in our home. Actually, there were seven, but one little girl died. There were six across the road in Uncle Ern's home. There were seven there also, but Eric was a little later coming, so there were six in each house and two in Kraft's house. So you get 14 children growing up together. We had a lively time. Sometimes we agreed and sometimes we didn't. And it reminds me of what my mother used to say about my brother and I. If we were quiet, she had to watch us. If we were fighting, things were all right. She knew where we were, and I think that's the way it was with the neighbor's children and us. If things were quiet, they had to watch and see just where we were and what we were into. As a very young child, I was almost drowned. Lee took me down to what was then Elliot's Wharf, and we crawled out to the end of the wharf onto a raft, and I can still remember the water over my head. I don't remember falling in, but I remember the water over my head, and when my head came up, I can still see Herman Elliot crawling down the ladder, and he saved my life. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today. However, it was told afterward that Lee said he just took this little girl down to show her around. I guess he was leading me out into some of the things of life, and I was almost finished on that occasion. These were just a few of the things that happened. Our parents were very, very careful with us that we would stay away from boats and wharves because they were always afraid of an accident. However, we did sometimes get very close to them.
I believe Merle, your youngest sister, saved Eric's life. down at Earnswarp.
Yes, I believe she did. I heard something about that. And I think another time that Alan Day almost lost his life. But fortunately, there was someone around to pull them out. I remember one time Mary fell out of a boat down here below Uncle Ernst. And I believe it was Christy that jumped in after her and fished her out. And I often wondered since if the boat had been out further, just what tragedy might have occurred, because he jumped in without thinking. She was in the water and he brought her out. I also remember as a child going down to Long Beach with my father one day and my mother's sister, and we must go in wading. And first thing we looked, and Alma was floating out to sea. And my father ruined his good shoes by having to go in after her. These things were tragedies in days when perhaps a man only had one pair of good shoes, but there was always a child doing something to keep you down, so to speak. One of the highlights of our summers were going fog bearing. And I can remember that was more or less a picnic. Mother often took us, and she would take as many of the neighbor children as wanted to go. We would pack a lunch and we would all go out through the woods to Plumper Bog and pick fog berries. Then as we got older, Lee and Willard and Christy would undertake to take us to different places. And I remember taking us out to what is known as Jimmy Clark's Bog one time and getting away out miles in the woods, and Willard saying, "There's a bear way over there in the woods somewhere." These were things that the boys would always like to tease us girls a little bit if they could. And of course, the way he said there was a bear, we were expecting to see it come out from behind the next bush. But we usually came home with a pail full of berries. Those days, there seemed to be lots of fog berries. And we would have a nice long day and put our energy to good use.
How were they eaten? What did your mother do with them?
Any that were soft, she would pick out and we'd eat with cream and sugar, and they were very, very tasty. Then she would just stew the others in their own juice and pack them away for winter, seal them with Parawax, and then in the winter, she would take them out and sweeten them. They seemed to keep very well without any sugar. In fact, they were better than preserved with sugar. And we enjoyed them very much. On Mother's birthday, she used to take us for picnics. When I say us, I don't mean just our family. We usually had two or three of Uncle Ernst as well. And we would go to a beach or to a field somewhere. Arbor Day was another day for picnics. Arbor Day, I believe, has gone out of the schools in later years, but it was usually held early in May. And we would spend the mornings cleaning the school. We'd wash the windows and the desks and do a good clean-up job. Both boys and girls worked very hard for this. The boys would rake the schoolyard. I believe Arbor Day went back to a time when the government set aside this day for planting trees. But we would give our one-room school the once-over from top to bottom, and then the teacher would take us on a picnic in the afternoon. And this picnic would take us, I remember one time, out Fenn's Back Field, and another time Camel's Beach. And later years, when we became less able to walk because of the appearance of cars, we would have it on the sandbar. These were good times, and there was a good community spirit that we enjoyed together.
Is any of that community spirit left?
Well, I believe it is underneath, but people are so busy. We tend to go to the St. John and the men that work there. The young people go to school there. By the time they come home at night, they're tired out. and they have to spend their time studying. We don't have time to let it surface. But I still believe that in times of crisis and times of trouble, people rise to the occasion.